This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 162 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and you lie.
I do? Why is that?
Because you're not currently in Hartford, Pennsylvania.
That's true. The remote studio, the on-the-road studio in some hotel in some place. And I seem to be without a normal voice.
And you seem to have lost your voice on the way, too. So this is going to be a slightly different episode, and it's a slightly different episode because of your fault, so that makes three things. Max has decided that we were going to skip the United States, and we're going to call this one UAVs Overseas. Tonight we're going to talk about the EU once your drone registered. The Israeli Defense Forces decided on an off-the-shelf drone trainer. Lockheed worked with Wausau University to control fleets of UAVs, ADS-B trials in Canada, Mercedes wants to deliver your drone by truck, and I did sneak in an American story on drone forensics.
Very good.
So with that, I think we probably should get started before your voice disappears even more. Well, our first story comes from the BBC. EU aviation groups want all drones to be registered. Now, this is a lot of aviation groups. It was Airlines for Europe, the American Council of International Airport, ACI, CANSO, which is the Civil Air Navigation Services Organization, the European Cockpit Association, the European Helicopter Association, the European Regions Airlines Association, the International Air Carrier Associations, the International Air Transport Association, the International Federation of Airline Pilots Associations, and the International Federation of Air Traffic Controllers Associations. All of them put together this recommendation, I guess we should probably call it. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, a joint statement. They're looking out at the increased use of drones, particularly in the non-commercial instances. They note that across the EU, different countries have different or are developing different standards, different rules governing drones. And what they'd like to do is bring some harmony to that and establish a set of guidelines, rules across all of the EU, which to me sounds like a pretty intelligent thing to say.
They gave three reasons. One was a lack of awareness and negligent behaviors from operators, consumers due to the technical possibilities of their drones versus legal restrictions. Lack of awareness about safety risks, in particular about the consequences of a collision between a drone and a manned aircraft, be it an airplane or a helicopter, and shortcomings in rule enforcement. Those are their three points. So what do they want to do? Well, I think they want to sort of model it after the FAA.
Yeah, I think so. I think they do look to the USA and some other places as well for some best practices. So the collection of groups created seven points that they wanted to make, starting with extensive public awareness campaign. They're calling for registration of all drones, and they cite as examples Ireland and the United States as something maybe that would represent a good model. They also look for mandatory training and certification or licensing of pilots. what they call technical performance limitations, which is really geofencing. Also, in-depth research into the impact of collisions between drones and manned aircraft. That's something we don't seem to have a lot of research on. Then two more, the integration of recreational drones into the National Model Aircraft Flying Regulations. And also the seventh, the final recommendation is to increase the effectiveness of enforcement. And I think these are all reasonable, wouldn't you say, David?
I do. The part that caught my eye and my attention was the quote that said, "The current National Model Aircraft Flying Regulations are mostly inadequate for drone flyers. This is because the classic model aircraft flyers traditionally build a greater safety margins into operation than drone users presently do." I thought that was a very interesting statement, which is, and it's something we sort of talked about a lot, which is being able to operate a very dangerous vehicle right out of the box without any real skill or thought, you know.
Yeah, or any training.
When you put in hundreds of hours building your airplane, the first time you fly it, you sort of want to make sure it comes back in one piece. You don't have that built-in cautiousness, I guess, when you're just taking it out of the box, throwing some batteries in it, and flying it. What do you think, Max?
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. Also, model aircraft, RC flying, in many cases tends to be more of a group activity, the club or whatever. And so you have that also moderating inappropriate or dangerous or unsafe behavior. With drones, it can be much more of a solo activity. You go by your drone, you get the box, you open it up, hey, you start flying right away.
So very interesting. It's kind of amazing that, you know, for all those months that we were talking about how far behind it seemed the FAA was, that now it seems like everybody's trying to model after them. So drone registration, register your drone and get a license or a certificate. So we'll have to keep following to see what happens with the EU and see how they, if they coalesce on standardized procedures or it'll be country by country given recent circumstances. So we'll keep following on that. Our next story is about the Israeli Defense Forces and setting up a UAV training academy. Drones have been a very active thing in the Israeli military. I would say probably they are number one in the world as far as that's concerned, if not, if it's either the U.S. or the Israelis who have been using drones. And they have persistent drone technology over the country. Usually they fly their aircraft, at least there's a drone flying over hotspots 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But they are suffering a shortage of pilots and they wanted to build a training program. This was from flightglobal.com. And they wanted to use a purpose-built drone for training. And I guess subsequently, the demand for pilots could not wait for a purpose-built drone. So they're looking to buy something off the shelf, like the IAI Heron.
And I think that makes sense, too. A purpose-built drone just for these training activities, I mean, it may allow you to create something that's just really specialized towards the kind of training that you want to provide. But besides the time that you mentioned, David, there's also the expense of doing that. And that's got to cost a lot more than just buying a drone off the shelf and using that for training. And there's certainly a lot of capable drones that could be used for this purpose. Although I understand they're looking for an Israeli company to supply that training drone.
Yeah, I think that the Israelis would just assume they are probably the best in the world, if not second best to the United States. So, yeah, they're purchasing their own products. So I can't fault them for that. Plus, it helps with the security. And the other interesting aspect was all Israeli drones have automatic takeoff and landing systems, which isn't something the United States has. However, it's really important that the drone operators have the ability to take off and land those systems. So I guess they're going to have to dumb down their UAVs so that people have the skills of takeoff and landing. And I believe we talked about that with some of the U.S. drones, that the couple of drone companies, they were looking for cheap drones that could crash because so pilots could make their mistakes and not spend lots of money. So let's go from Israel to Poland. Lockheed and Warsaw University demonstrate UAV fleet command and control. This was from GPS World, and it's command and control over multiple platforms. We've talked about drone swarms, but this is more interoperativeness. I think I just made up that word.
It sounds good.
Interoperativity, where...
Now that one's made up.
That one's definitely made up, where one drone will work with other drones in communicating back and forth to be more efficient. You're having interconnectivity between the drones and not going back through a base and then back out. So Professor Janusz Narsowitz, the head of WT's Department of Automation and Aeronautical Systems, said, quote, "Understanding how different assets can interoperate, communicate, and serve common objectives with maximum efficiency is a challenging task in the growing field of UAV technologies." So you want your drones to inevitably talk to each other and learn from that communication.
You know, David, they talk about optimizing fleets of manned and unmanned aircraft, and they've got this demonstration that they've conducted. And they talk about using mathematical modeling methods to evaluate the situation, the flight paths and so forth, and calculate a, quote, best answer. You know, it sounds like they're using mathematical optimization techniques, which is something that is used in a variety of other different kinds of applications. I think this is the first time I've heard it being used in an application like this, where you're trying to control a mix of various unmanned aircraft. So fascinating stuff. Yet again, another example of, well, you know, the kind of the research that's coming out of the use of unmanned aircraft, and not just how do you coordinate them, how do you fly them together safely, but you know, all these other different aspects of use. It's really causing a lot of new technology to be developed. I think that's fascinating.
Transmitting data between vehicles. We've talked about on Airplane Geeks, we've talked about the F-35 and the fact that it's a battle node, in the jargon, is that it's designed to be a sensor for other aircraft as well as being a offensive aircraft. In this case, it's drones. And one of the examples they gave was a search and rescue mission where you have multiple drones flying patterns and communicating back and forth to narrow the search so that they're not, by communicating back and forth, you're not overflying the same area twice. One drone will say to the other drone, "I've been there. Don't go there. There's nothing to look at." And that can minimize the time it would be for search and rescue. So that's the kind of thing. There also will be a video of the program in the show notes. So that's a good thing.
Next up, we see in engineering.com an item. This is titled "On the Ground at the Commercial UAV Show, Asia 2016. And what this is just some observations of someone who walked around the show, looked to see what was there. This was held September 1st and 2nd in Singapore. And they note several things, that Aerialtronics, the Netherlands-based company that specializes in precision agriculture and inspections and things like that, they showed a gas sniffer that can be used to detect gas leaks in pipelines. Noted that Parrot Offshoot SenseFly showed applications for agriculture and property mapping. They mentioned the EB, a fixed-wing drone, the Ukrainian-based Skyton, that is a company that actually has a manned aircraft history, and they've just recently started to manufacture airframes and avionics systems for third parties who are looking to fly their own sensor packages. This is kind of a traveling show, the commercial UAV show. They go to London next at the Excel Center. That's coming up October 19th and 20th, 2016. But perhaps the takeaway, one of the takeaways from this, David, besides just the interesting products that are being shown at this conference, is that there are so many of these conferences out there, really across the world, where there's just a huge interest in what you can do with unmanned aircraft and what the different vendors are offering, hardware, software, all of that. We just see an enormous number of these conferences and exhibitions and so forth dealing with unmanned aircraft. It just really shows that this is being viewed as a significant and important industry really around the world.
If I say this, don't let our pilot friend say it, but maybe it's the future of aviation.
It sure is generating, as we said, as I've said over and over again, a lot of interesting research and development. But when you look at this, you just have to believe that this is going to generate an enormous economy around this industry. People using these for just a wide variety of different applications, all of the, well, again, hardware and software, suppliers, sensor components, all of these things add up to what's got to be a large economic activity in the not too distant future. So, yeah, that is the future of aviation, I think, in a certain sense.
Well, let's move across the world to Canada. This was from PRWeb.com. Dragonfly Innovations receives permission to test ADS-B communications technology. Dragonfly is installing the UAvionics 1/2W ping transceivers on its Dragonfly Commander product, and they're testing this in Canada. Now, ADS-B is the transceivers that are to provide sense-and-avoid technology for manned aircraft, and they want to integrate UAVs. Whereas you don't have ground tracking the aircraft, and correct me if I'm wrong with this, Max, but the aircraft is tracking other aircrafts and providing notification if there's a potential collision, etc. So we're talking a quadcopter called the Commander, and it's kind of a neat quadcopter because it folds into a little package that's 6.25 inches wide. When it's flying, it's 34 inches with and is capable of carrying a Sony camera. And it's carrying a transceiver, the Ping 2020, which is 25 millimeters by 39 millimeters by 12 millimeters and can track aircraft for 100 statute miles. So we get the ADS-B that's big enough to put in a quadcopter, right? What do you think, Max?
Yeah, we're seeing this miniaturization of ADS-B. It wasn't too long ago. It just seems like, easily at the beginning of this year when we were kind of observing ADS-B technology or the system and saying, wouldn't that be great if it was something that was small enough, light enough, had a low power consumption so that it could be used on a quadcopter or something like that? And at the time, you know, I think all of those criteria were not being met. They were big, they were heavy, they were expensive, took a lot of power. But we're seeing that change pretty quickly from a number of different vendors. And that really does open up a lot of possibilities for the, air traffic management when it comes to mixing drones into the manned aircraft space.
It's coming. We've got a whole bunch of new operators for UAVs that were formerly known as pilots, and they've been terrified that these things were going to enter the airspace. But ADS-B has been a technology and is been working on for a long time in manned aviation. So these small little transceivers could benefit general aviation as well as UAVs, because general aviation wants a small, compact, easily to install, lightweight ADS-B, because they're going to be required to have it by the FAA. interesting how the UAV industry is helping, could possibly be helping GA come aboard with ADS-B.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, all those characteristics that drone operators need are also characteristics that general aviation would love, because, you know, it's a good, simple, lightweight, easy way, inexpensive way to implement the requirement that's coming for ADS-B.
Okay. This article that my co-host threw in the show notes, and the word Mercedes and drone would not necessarily come across my lips, or I would think they would be, but Mercedes is developing a delivery van that's going to have drones do the final delivery. Kind of a rolling aircraft carrier for package delivery.
No, that's a good analogy. So what we see here is that Daimler AG, that's the maker of Mercedes-Benz, they've actually acquired a minority stake in Matternet. This is under a five-year, 500 million euro project to develop drones for networked electric delivery vans. They have a title for the entire project. It's Advance, except that the V-A-N in Advance is in capital. So there you get your delivery van. But they're going to be looking at a lot of different areas, automation, robotics, things like that. But the vision van idea is that there would still be a human driver making deliveries in this van, but the drone or drones would simultaneously make additional deliveries. And so what they have is a mechanism inside the van that picks up the package, loads it onto the drone through an opening in the roof, and then Matternet's cloud system creates the delivery route and the path to return to the van. They also are looking for some technology designed by Matternet to automatically swap out drone batteries to keep them charged. So it's interesting. We have seen other concepts like this in the past, where there's a combination motor car, vehicle, a van that's using drone to make deliveries. Mercedes is obviously very interested in this because they're putting up 500 million euros as part of this project.
It's cool. I like it. I like the fact that the two drones operate independently, and basically you could have one drone charging and the other one flying. But package delivery, I think it's the second biggest thing next to precision agriculture. Everybody wants to deliver packages by drones. And Over the last week or so, or last month, we've had, I think today we've had Chipotle being delivered by drones, and we've had pizza. And so I think our survey of the week will be, and this came up in our Slack team, what food do you want delivered by drone? You know, and as a sidelight, I started thinking about this, and my overall gut reaction was, I don't want my food delivered by drone. I started thinking about this, and I have flown in the back of a T-6 Texan and tried to take pictures. I have been at altitude with the Golden Knights. Now, your pizza guy delivering from Domino's or Papa John's or your local pizza parlor, imagine him sticking your pizza out the window and driving to your place. Does that
gonna get
pizza
cold.
Does that pizza actually arrive hot? Domino's went through thousands of transitions to come up with bags that will keep the pizza hot, you know, or keep the burritos hot, or keep the Chinese hot. You stick it in a quadcopter out in the open, and it's going how many quickly to your house. I've decided food delivery is probably not what we want to be doing with UAVs, but that's just my opinion. And if you have a real issue with that theory, then you could write to max@theuavdigest.com.
Thanks, David. Well, you know what else is, you need beyond visual line of sight to do deliveries like that.
Agreed.
In the U.S., we don't have that yet.
Agreed, but I think it's safe to assume, Max, that eventually we're going to get rules and regulations for beyond line of sight.
Yes.
Are we going to put another battery on the quadcopter to power the bag to keep the pizza hot? I've decided food delivery, medical supplies I like, water, definitely, in the events of hazards and stuff like that. But nope, you know what? I'll just assume drive and get my pizza at the pizza parlor and drive it home. It doesn't need to come by quadcopter. I'm sure Rob, when he hears this, is going to be absolutely shocked. But that's my little 2 cents addition to deliveries by drone.
Okay.
So let's talk about deliveries by drones. And we've talked about this in the past where, and this leads on to this next story, where someone's delivering narcotics over a wall into a prison with a UAV. And they haven't been able to prosecute people because they haven't been able to do a data link between the vehicle and maybe the controller or who was operating, etc. With law enforcement actually doing this kind of studies or forensics, they've been having trouble being able to use it for prosecution because the evidence gets corrupted. You know, the chain of evidence, which anyone's seen CSI or Law and Order here in the States or any, you can't mess with the chain of custody for evidence. You know, you have to document it so that it can't be shown it's corrupted. Well, for every problem, and we like to say in insurance, for every problem, there's a solution. And
I thought you were going to say for every problem, there's a premium.
Well, there's a solution, but that usually comes with a premium.
Okay. Sorry.
But that being said, and this is from GCN.com, Department13.com has developed a commercial system of doing forensics on UAVs. I thought this was really kind of cool that they can now work with law enforcement to determine things like, did that remote actually fly that drone? And they are doing it in a way where the chain of custody and the chain of evidence is well documented, thorough, and their results are that law enforcement can use that evidence now for prosecutions.
Yeah, that's very interesting. That's an area where I don't think we've seen anybody take a look at and come up with some solutions.
So they're working together with law enforcement. If you go to their website, they come from a military background, and they've talked about encryption and the fact that they don't necessarily some of the drone companies work with them. They didn't say specifically who. Others don't want anything to do with it, but the drones aren't as encrypted as a computer is because they don't have the battery power, the strength, et cetera. So they're able to pull a lot of data out of, you know, we talked about last week, the shotgun blown apart UAV by that woman. Well, they probably could reconstruct the data from that drone to figure out who was actually flying it. So check out Department 13, besides the fact that they have a really cool name. I like that, Department 13. So our last major story for today was our Las Vegas conference. And FAA Administrator Huerta delivered the keynote at InterDrone. What do you think, Max? Did you watch it?
No, I've been in the car most of the day, so I haven't yet watched it. But what I'm seeing is people make comments on a couple of points. One is that he reiterated, Michael Huerta reiterated, that a proposal from the FAA for flying over crowds would be released by the end of this year. And then he also talked about the fact that they're working on proposals for flying beyond visual line of sight. But David, did he commit to any time frame for that?
No. I don't think so. And I haven't, I've been checking the Slack team and it doesn't look like he did. It's coming though. Let's just say he didn't commit to a time frame, but the fact that they're talking about it means that it can't be that far off. We'll probably see it early 2017, which is a really good thing, Max. We're moving along fairly rapidly at this point.
Yeah, I think because of the complexity of flying beyond line of sight, developing the rules for that, I would be really, really surprised if we'd see a proposal by the end of this year, 2016. I mean, it would be nice. And I think a lot of companies, particularly those looking at package delivery, would appreciate that. But I think you're right, David. I think that realistically, I'm not sure we'll see anything until sometime in 2017, sometime next year.
But that's okay. I'm okay with that. I'd rather them get it right like we did with Part 107. It came out and there was hardly any complaints. So good for the FAA. Let's keep cheering them on and have them motivated to do it the right way. And I think the industry is moving them along and helping. You know, we're not being adversarial anymore. We're being on the same team, because it's good when it comes out and it works without much effort. I think that's what my opinion of 107 was. It came out and everyone went, okay, we're good with this. Let's move on. Beyond line of sight, it's going to happen. We know that. It's just, let's get it right. You know, and a little extra time won't hurt us.
Well, David, I think that's going to about wrap it up for this episode of the UAV Digest. As always, we want to thank all of you for listening to the show. You can find us at theuavdigest.com, and show notes are at theuavdigest.com/162.
And of course, we want you to join our Slack listener team. It's a lot of fun, a lot of people, interaction, a lot of stories. You can find us at theuavdigest.com/team. You can find us on Twitter, and I think this week we'll probably have a Twitter poll about what food do you want delivered by your quadcopter. And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/UAV Digest. We'd like to thank our sponsors. We'd also like you to check our show notes, because we've talked a lot about conferences today, and we have a lot of conferences that we do media swaps with, where we talk about their conference and they give us a little promotion at theirs. So take a few minutes and do definitely stop by the show notes so that we can communicate out to our conference people that you guys are actually paying attention and value that information. Leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or Google Play. You can get some swag from us at our Cafe Press store, or you can, of course, become a sponsor or a patron of the show at patreon.com. And like I said, all of those links are available on our show notes. So I should shut up now so my co-host can edit and go to bed. And so this is David in Philly.
And Max, not in Hartford this time.
On the road. Thanks for listening.